This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. We've got FA Cup action to look ahead to this weekend. Really excited for that. Jack Reeve joined alongside Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings. Mark, the time has finally come. Mr. Frank Lampard is looking for another job.
Yeah, I mean, probably coming to a TV studio near you, I would imagine. It won't be. He'll need a break. It would have been a tough year for him. And, you know, that's the third sort of job in a row now where maybe it hasn't gone quite as he'd hoped. The Derby one always divides opinion. Now, if you look at the players he had, Tomori and Mount, and you know, you feel like he maybe could have got automatic promotion or at least promotion, didn't happen. At Chelsea, there were some good times, and then, you know, Thomas Tuchel improved them considerably when he went in. And I think even Everton, you know, the fans were happy enough with the way that he led them to survival, but there were some bleak times sort of before that and after that. I mean, biggest surprise for me, though, is that there are some people that are surprised by the fact of where Everton are in the league. I mean, they were terrible last season, and then they sold Richarlison and didn't replace him. So the idea that they were suddenly going to move up towards mid-table just was an odd one. I mean, I know you're not Lampard's biggest fan. I wouldn't say I'm not his biggest fan. I'd cut him some slack, though, in this job because, I mean, there have been bigger and better managers at Everton that have also, in inverted commas, failed. But I'm not sure what success is at Everton at the moment, you know?
They're in a really sticky situation, aren't they? I mean, recruitment's been shocking. The ownership is trouble, to say the least. And the shortlist looks interesting as well. Sean Dyche is the favourite to go in at Goodison Park. You've got Marcelo Bielsa on the list as well. Sam Allardyce had been backed in earlier in the week. I think he said he won't be taking the job. But you look at that shortlist, Mark, and no one really stands out.
Well, if Dyche is favourite and Bielsa is second favourite, I mean, that immediately says you don't know what you want They're very different managers. They would want very different players. They would need to behave in, different ways for the squad, you know, whoever comes in there. I think as far as Everton are concerned, well, I think if you go for Bielsa, you do it, you accept that there could be some short-term pain and you know, there might even be more chance of being relegated with Bielsa than, say, Sean Dyche. But the plan is in place for you to, if you maybe you do stay up, but whatever happens, the plan is in place for the whole recruitment to be ripped up. And you just accept that maybe you do go down because taking Bielsa on mid-season, trying to learn his ideas and philosophy for the players, I think would be very difficult. Not to say it can't be done, but it would be harder than, say, Sean Dyche, who comes in, you know, gets them playing, you know, probably 4-4-2. Tarkowski would know that. You know, you've got Tarkowski and Cody. You'd imagine they'd enjoy playing in something like that. You could, you know, get in your shape, be good at set pieces, difficult to beat, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is, I think, with doing that is that this time next year, we could be in the same position with Everton where, going, they're in another relegation battle. And, it's a style of football that the fans maybe wouldn't love. And it's also, I mean, look at Burnley now under Vincent Kompany. I know they're in a different division, but I'm sure the fans are enjoying that far more
Absolutely.
Than they did.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, that the Dyche way of doing things. And I do think there's a reason why he hasn't had kind of, you know, bigger and better jobs, because I don't think that his way of playing is progressive. And like, it might work up until a point and it will work for certain teams. But, you know, Everton need to make a decision, I think, based not just around this season. I think they've done too many of those. They need to have a plan of like what the next 3 years looks like for them, even if that includes relegation. And so, I mean, I Carlos Corberan was being linked, wasn't he? As well, I saw. I think he'd be an interesting appointment. I think he's done well in the Championship. Got that kind of Bielsa philosophy. You know, I could see a plan in place if he was to go there. And like I say, with Bielsa, but I just don't see I don't see somebody that you go, yeah, that feels like a natural fit. I suspect they'll go for Dyche and just make another short term, appointment. It might work in the short term, but I mean, like longer term, I wondered if somebody like Postecoglou would he, I know that this might anger Celtic fans because why would you leave Celtic for what could be a Championship team? But if you could keep Everton up, like there must be some potential there. And I like his style of football, but I don't know if he's better off staying at Celtic. And that's a sad state of affairs, I think, for a Premier League team if you'd be less attractive than working in Scotland, as big as Celtic are. I think Everton would hope to be big enough to attract somebody like that, but I'm not sure that they are at the moment.
We've spoken about it before, haven't we, Mark? And you know, we're all huge football fans, and those listening to us, so they can relate. You want your manager or your head coach to be more than just the man that kind of implements a style. You want them to take you on a journey. I think the role of a manager has changed hugely over the last decade. You know, that you want that connection with them. You want to see a certain style implemented. You want the belief to kind of ooze throughout that team. And the likes of, maybe it might be harsh to throw Dyche in there, but the Allardyces of the world, it feels like that role has almost gone now, and you need something more. And you mentioned there the job that has been done at Celtic and Corberan at West Brom this season. That's the kind of style and person you want now.
I think so. I 100% agree. There's a lot to be said for the manager being a figurehead, and look, not everybody's going to play the same way. And I think that you can still be successful. I mean, Thomas Frank, for instance, you know, that Brentford team, fairly direct, I would say, but it's not boring football all the time. You know, they look to get the ball up quickly to their forward players, but there's a plan in place, and he has taken the fans on that journey with him. And I think as football fans, you've all had those managers that have taken you there and have got everybody, you know, from the old sort of cliche tea lady, to the top scorer, all pulling in the same direction. And I think that, you know, it's so much better. It's so much more fun being part of a football club that's got that mentality. So maybe 100%. From that point of view, you're looking at a Rooney as somebody that could maybe, galvanise. But I don't know. I feel like there could be a manager in Rooney. But, you know, would you be appointing him because of his managerial ability or because of his connection solely towards Everton? And that I don't think Everton are in position to make that call, emotionally. I think it needs to be with, like I say, with a clear plan. And maybe it is Rooney and he can get everybody on that journey. I think somebody that could take the club on that journey is just whether he's actually good enough as a manager. And I suppose we don't know the answer to that, do we?
I'm just always slightly wary about former players coming back in. I've been scarred being a Norwich fan.
Oh, yes. As Spurs, Glenn Hoddle would be. I mean, Glenn Hoddle, Ozzie Ardiles, would be two that immediately jumped to mind that didn't work out for Tottenham.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Everton. I think it's worth noting as well, though, we're speaking as if they're cut adrift. One win and it takes them out of the bottom three. So a big couple of weeks ahead for Everton. Mark, let's speak about the EFL Cup now then. We've had two semi-finals. Again, another midweek with some decent football, which is always great to see. We'll start with Southampton, Newcastle. Newcastle taking a goal lead going into the second leg. And although Southampton had one disallowed, you'd probably say it was a deserved win for the away side.
Yeah. I mean, another clean sheet.
Is that 10 in a row now?
I've lost count. Obviously, they conceded amazing, in the FA Cup, didn't they? But certainly in terms of, when they feel like they've got their best team out, I don't know if you can do a stat on that. You know, they're not conceding many goals. Deserve to win the game. I thought, obviously, Joelinton missed and a much easier chance than the one he scored. So the XG was, you know, very strong in their favour. Yeah, I mean, I just think about the EFL Cup that we just shouldn't have two legs. I just don't understand it. I mean, you know, okay, one team will have a, you know, a home advantage in the semi-final, but yeah, one team's got a home advantage in the quarterfinals. I mean, you know, to me, that's just the luck of the draw. You know, let's just get on with it and let's have the Newcastle Man United final. I don't think we needed two legs. But yeah, Newcastle deserve to win. And, you know, be a big occasion for them if they do manage to get to Wembley, as it will be Manchester United, who, of course, you know, on, by their standards, a long trophy drought. So that 3-0 win at Forest has, you know, virtually killed the tie. So be very surprised if it's not a United final.
Yeah, it was another great game for United. A nice goal from Rashford, Weghorst off the score sheet. Just quickly back to that Newcastle game, Mark. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Jacob Murphy wave. Were you a fan of that?
Well,
it
depends what's gone on, right? Okay, so if Skeleta Sarr has said something and, you know, it's resulted in that, then it's okay. If he's just done it, purely on the basis of him getting the red card, then I'm not in favour of that. I thought it was just unnecessary.
It's the type of act that if was done at a five-a-side game would create some kind of brawl, I think. Just that passive aggressive. I'm surprised as well, because obviously the Murphys broke through at Norwich and they were the most quiet, meek twins you would ever meet. And I just didn't expect that from him.
I don't know. Like I say, if something's gone on previously, then maybe it's just an extension of that. If it's kind of just being done, you know, for no particular reason, I thought it was a bit nasty.
Just quickly focusing on United and Weghorst in particular, Mark, what have you made of him so far? We've had a couple of games watching him as the kind of man leading the line for United. What have been your early thoughts?
That he's a reason, you know, given that United didn't want to spend any money in this window, like there weren't that many options available. I think he's an okay recruit. He's not going to run past opposing defences. I mean, he brings other people into play reasonably well. And Manchester United will feel like they deserve to have somebody better in that centre forward role, and that they'd be right to think that. But you know, I think he does a job and just fills that void at least until the summer. And that's what I like about Ten Hag. I think he's a problem solver. You've seen that throughout. You know, he wanted somebody to play that like Lisandro Martinez role, didn't he, when he was sort of just coming back from the World Cup. So he put Luke Shaw in there because he felt that he could do that job. You've seen Fred come on and play, you know, vital substitute roles in terms of closing down sort of the best player of the opposition. He's got the best out of Rashford. I just think he's doing a really, you know, for the first season, I think Ten Hag really getting to grips with the club. And I you know, and this was just it's not an amazing signing, but it just felt like a clever one. And United haven't made too many of those over the last sort of 5 years, have they?
Absolutely. From one trophy to another, then let's discuss the biggest FA Cup tie of the weekend. Yeah, it's Manchester City against Arsenal. Really looking forward to this one. Friday at 8 o'clock, Manchester City 8-11 favourites. Arsenal 10-3, 16-5 the draw. Mark, Man City against Arsenal, like buses. Wait a while and then we've got a few of these fixtures coming up over the next few months.
Yeah, I was really caught off guard by the fact that they're playing on a Champions League night next month when Borussia Dortmund are playing Chelsea. It's Club Brugge against Benfica. And you've also got Man City v Arsenal on Amazon.
What game will you be picking to watch?
Oh, it will depend whether I'm working, because I sometimes work on Champions League night. So if they're there, I'll have to watch the Champions League. If not, I'll start with the Arsenal City game and then see where we get to, because it's 7:30 and Champions League doesn't start till 8:00. So potential to watch both. But no, I mean, I think that Premier League game will obviously be massive. I think. Interesting to know, isn't it, whether this will be a big game in terms of, we'll know, I think, once the teams are out, because Man City rested a lot of players, didn't matter. They beat Chelsea easily in the last round. for Arsenal, you know, you're looking at list of priorities. I mean, it'd be a distant second in terms, you know, given where they are in the Premier League. Does Arteta, you know, attempt to put his best team out, keep that winning run going, sort of show Arsenal just why they're, you know, top dogs, to show City just why they're top dogs? The flip side of that is, you play your best team and you lose, does that actually damage the confidence of the team when they've got these Man City league games coming up? I suspect it will be a mix and match team from both, because you want to give your squad players a run out. And I actually think it'll have no impact whatsoever on the title race. I just think that, you know, we always try and overthink and overblow the importance of one game on another.
In terms of Haaland, then, we've chatted about him probably more than any other player on this podcast this season. And comments you made at the start of the campaign when the transfer kind of first went through still stick with me. And I think you've been spot on, Mark, in a sense that does Haaland necessarily make City a better side? I guess it might be more difficult to make that argument when he keeps on scoring hat-tricks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, another hat. Yeah, but the thing is, Man City would have only needed one goal from somebody else to have won that game against Wolves. I mean, it's not about Haaland. Yeah, I mean, Haaland's an absolute monster in the penalty box. Just, you know, he scores loads of goals. It's just at times when he plays, and I think it'll be really interesting when it comes to like a Champions League semi-final or something, if Man City get there. I do wonder whether Guardiola will go for that extra midfielder, because there have been games and big games this season when they've lost control of matches. You know, they've lost at Old Trafford. They lost, didn't they, Anfield as well. Like, these are important games that, I don't know. And he didn't actually have much of an impact on those games. And I just think that Pep Guardiola so far has stuck by Haaland virtually every important game. And he didn't do that, did he, with Aguero? He doesn't do that with anybody else. So in terms of sort of beating the lesser teams, I think having somebody like Haaland up front probably is an advantage. The idea, though, that he was brought in to win them the Champions League, I just don't think it works like that. But if he does play against Arsenal, you know, he's the most likely person to score. But if he does start against them, I think Arsenal will also feel like they've got more opportunity to bring the ball out and sort of dominate or at least compete properly in that midfield area.
One striker that has made a real difference in recent weeks is Eddie Nketiah. Now, I think there were plenty of discussions to be had about whether Jesus' injury would damage Arsenal's title credentials. But I must say, Mark, that Arsenal United game, probably one of my favourite encounters in the Premier League this season. It had everything. And the last-minute goal from Nketiah could prove to be huge.
Yeah, I mean, I hold my hands up. I was one of those that doubted Nketiah, but you know, he's stepped up. He's doing what Arsenal need of him. I think there have been some comparisons drawn actually with another youngster that was plying his trade across North London in Harry Kane, in where for a long time people doubted whether he was good enough. And you know, it wasn't he didn't have remarkable loan spells and. One at Norwich that went particularly badly, and I think there were definitely fans of Arsenal, and it would have been the same at Spurs, that felt like the club needed to have better players in reserve. And now, obviously, you know, Kane's on course to break all kinds of records. I'm not sure Nketiah will get to those landmarks, but I think parallels can be drawn. And he couldn't be doing any more for Arsenal. I think you've got to say that.
They're going well, aren't they? In terms of this game, Mark, what's your bet?
Well, obviously, team news is hugely important, so it's with that caveat. But I was looking at Arsenal or draw, double chance. It's obviously a hard game for both teams, but I just think Arsenal can hurt City. It does depend as to whether Martinelli plays and Saka and, you know, Odegaard. But if some of those players are there, you have to say that Arsenal, deserve to be top of the table at the moment. They won at Spurs, absolutely, you know, controlled that game, deservedly beat in Manchester United. It was late, but it was coming, that goal. And they just keep on sort of stepping up when required. And so this is a difficult game. Of course it is. But I'm still not convinced that Man City are playing this unbelievable sort of football like we've seen in previous years. They're trying to find it. I don't think they're there yet. They're conceding too many goals in big games. You know, they found themselves 2-0 down at Spurs, didn't they, the other Thursday, against Spurs the other Thursday night, managed to pull it around. But do they manage to do that, you know, if they fall behind against Arsenal? I'm not so sure. So Arsenal not to lose.
Okay, let's take a look at some of the other FA Cup action. And we'll start with an early kickoff on Saturday, Accrington against Leeds. This should be a bit of fun, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, last week, you remember me and Dan Childs were both going on about Accrington's injury crisis for that game at Barnsley. I mean, they did manage to beat Boreham Wood after extra time in midweek, but only in the league. Yeah, I'll have a look at their shot stats. Really not going well at the moment. Since Christmas, the only game where they've had more attempts was the Morecambe game, and Morecambe obviously not very good in that division. Two wins in 10 in terms of in 90 minutes. So I think the injuries are hurting Accrington. And I mean, I don't know if I've ever said this, well, certainly not in the last couple of years. I'm going to go for Leeds to win to nil, which you've got the obvious the concern here that Leeds are not very good defensively, but they did keep a clean sheet against Brentford, kept one against Newcastle as well recently, and they're taking a significant step down. And you know, Accrington, like I say, have just been struggling to get shots away in recent weeks.
I think we had a pretty successful week of tipping on the show last week, didn't we, Mark?
Well, it was very much a sort of one of two halves, wasn't it? I'm absolutely flying on the... I think the first five in the Premier League all won. And then I think the next five might have all lost. But yeah, there was still profit to be made out of it. But spectacular start and then got worse. But yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes.
I must have picked well. And I think the majority of selections I had off you won last week. So thanks very much for that. Let's take a look at Preston against Spurs then. This is 6 o'clock on Saturday. I'm not sure on the actual statistics here, but I suspect Preston have one of the worst home records certainly in the Championship. They've been garbage at home this season, but and Spurs travel there this weekend. What are you expecting?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that, I think they've scored 8 home goals all season in the league. Now, they obviously, if you remember, they started, didn't they, with that crazy amount of, what was it? Was it 5-0 in the first 6 games?
It was basically every game was either 0-0 or 1-0.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, an obvious problem for Preston's goal scoring. I tend to think these home and away records will eventually sort themselves out. I like the football that Ryan Lowe likes to play. I remember seeing was it Bury, wasn't it? And then he went to... I saw more of them than I did sort of Plymouth when he was there. I liked what he was attempting to do, even in those early stages of his career. And I expect them to try and do that against Tottenham as well, you know, play the football. But Tottenham to win and under 3.5 goals was the way I was looking. There was a definite attitude shift at Fulham from Spurs' point of view. They got the goal and then it was, you know, we're keeping a clean sheet. They got everybody behind the ball. Conte said they had a player sort of meeting, confrontation, where they discussed the terrible defensive record and, you know, how they were just not desperate enough to keep clean sheet. So with that in mind, Tottenham to win and under 3.5 goals.
8 o'clock on Saturday, Manchester United against Reading. Another good opportunity here, Mark, for Manchester United to maybe progress deep into a tournament.
Yeah, and the fact that the sort of League Cup tie looks sort of already over means they might be able to pick a reasonably strong team here and not worry too much about the midweek. I mean, why this game on TV? Well, I was going to say I'll never know. I know why, because Manchester United, you know, do bring in viewers. But, I mean, please, I feel like I've seen this Cup tie about 20 times. I think they've only met a couple, but It just feels like
it's one of those games, isn't it? I know what you mean. Yeah.
So I'm going to go for this game to be over by half time. So Man United, Manchester United on the half time, full time double result. So for them to be leading at 45 minutes and at full time, which has happened in seven of their last nine home games. Reading two clean sheets in 11, a 4-0 defeat at Stoke doesn't read too well. And, you know, United were quick off the blocks against Forest as well in midweek.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Reading early on in the season, just starting to tail off a little bit. Sunday, 1:30, let's move on to Sunday's action then. And Brighton against Liverpool. I think if there were one team Liverpool didn't want to draw, it'd probably be Brighton.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, what about sort of 11-10 for that league game at the Amex? And they're out to 7-5. So there has been a reasonable shift, but fully deserved, given the fact that, you know, Brighton absolutely battered them, you know, just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I'm gonna go for Brighton to win. I suppose it's on the sort of lower end, really, of what I was hoping for from a price point of view. But the chances of us being able to back Brighton at the same price they were a couple of weeks ago just was never going to happen, was it? You know, I mean, the interesting thing here is that Brighton just full of goals at the moment. Nine of their last 11, they've scored at least twice. I think another interesting point that maybe was lost on some people, Liverpool were absolutely friendless for that game in the betting markets against Chelsea last week, and they didn't deserve to win that match. And, you know, what was it, 9 shots on target to 2 when they went to Brighton just a couple of weeks ago. So I'll go for Brighton to repeat the dose.
Okay. Sunday, 4:30, Wrexham hosting Sheffield United. Both sides going fairly well this season. I'll say fairly well, that's probably harsh. Very well this season. Now, what do you expect to happen here, Mark?
I'm going to go for an upset. Wrexham, about 7-2. They're obviously better than a normal National League side. Could be on course for like 100 points this season. And the crazy thing is that they're not certain of winning it, because Notts County are also very good. And, you know, Chesterfield are doing well as well. But, you know, Wrexham, because of the money that's gone in there, I think if they were in league, it's hard to know exactly their level at the moment. But we do know was that they beat Coventry away in the last round. So they're up to beating Championship teams. Chesterfield, who are 13 points worse off than Wrexham, albeit with 3 games in hand, they held West Brom at home in the third round and nearly beat them. And Sheffield United did not put out a full-strength team despite beating Millwall 2-0. Millwall weren't at full strength for that game either, if you look back at the team's ability. So both have got bigger fish to fry. I just wonder if Sheffield United make too many changes here, whether they could come a cropper. And yeah, around about sort of in excess of 3-1. I can take a chance on Wrexham. I think it'll be a decent game. Wrexham matches tend to have a few goals in them. So hopefully that they can get the majority.
I guess worth noting as well, in terms of team selection for Sheffield United, they're under a transfer embargo as well, aren't they? So,
and the manager was talking, wasn't he, about, you know, the one thing they can't afford is injuries. And, you know, reaching the Premier League to having a cup run, I mean, you know, in terms of levels of importance, I mean, one doesn't even register, does it?
No brainer, absolutely. One FA Cup game on the Monday, Derby hosting West Ham. Quite friendly. I never used to like Derby for some reason, sort of an unjustified hatred for them. But I haven't had much luck with my Akkers recently. But 2 late goals from Derby in midweek meant that I had a winner at last. So they host West Ham. I'm quite keen on Derby at the moment, Mark.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of people here that can sort of sniff cup upset. Derby unbeaten in 19. They've won 5 in a row at home, clearly heading in the right direction. I'm going to do a big but here, and that is the fact that, yeah, they're now up against a Premier League team, and 4-6 for a Premier League team to win at Derby, I thought was actually more than fair. I've written on my notes fair enough. I think it's more than fair. David Moyes is up, you know, he's bang under pressure at the moment. I think that means he has to pick a strong team for this game. And if they take it seriously, West Ham, like, they're not as bad as the league table suggests. You know, I don't see them being involved in a relegation dogfight. Agird at the back has made a positive impact for them as well. They've got enough creativity in the forward line, I think, to get the job done with minimum fuss here. And yeah, 4-6 to beat what is still a League One team, a big League One team, but a League One team, I thought was okay for West Ham.
Okay, there's some televised FA Cup action previewed for you. Fear not, we've still got some EFL goodness to get stuck into as well. Let's talk to Dan Childs for him to cover that.
And now we're joined by my Racing Post colleague, Dan Childs, to talk all things EFL and also cover the FA Cup games that we've not already mentioned previously. Childsy, you okay?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Mark.
So then, you've got one in the FA Cup, I know, and then we'll go to the EFL. Let's start in the fourth round of the Cup.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a bit of a shock result. Going to go for Blackpool, who are struggling down, towards the foot of the Championship. Blackpool to not lose away to Southampton. Blackpool obviously got Mick McCarthy, has just gone in there for his latest job. I actually think Mick McCarthy's, been a pretty good manager down the years. And the one thing you do know with him is he's probably going to get a reaction from the players. He doesn't stand for a lack of effort. I think he's got some good tools to work with as well at Blackpool. I know they've been on a bad run, but I watched them the other week, and Josh Bowler, who they've got back on loan now from Nottingham Forest, is a really exciting winger. Jerry Yates, he's a big goal threat for them up front. Gary Medin, is a decent target man. I think they've got some good players, just been underperforming a little bit. And I can see them, offering a decent test to Southampton. I think it's a good time to play Southampton as well. I think the FA Cup is undoubtedly their kind of third priority. Obviously, staying up is the big one. They're in the middle of this EFL Cup semi-final against Newcastle, which, although they're 1-0 down, they're not out of it. So their focus, I think, is going to be, more for next week, for that second leg, and then onto the league games. Lathan Jones done a good job there. I think he is improving them, and I look at a more organised side. But this is the game, I think, where he's going to be resting players. I think they're going to be, Blackpool going to have a decent opportunity, and Southampton look too short to me, look worth opposing.
Cool. Okay. Well, I don't know if we're going to be going for similarly priced teams in the EFL or sort of something a bit shorter. But do you want to go through your best two bets there?
Yeah, got a bit of both actually. The first one, I'm going to go for Carlisle away to Rochdale in League Two. Carlisle fourth in the league. Fancy them to win the game here. Rochdale at the foot of the table. Carlisle been a bit of a surprise package really this season under Paul Simpson. He's an extremely underrated coach, been in the game a long time, but he's in his second spell at Carlisle, did a good job in his first spell there. And they're kind of under the radar, really, but they're the division's top scorers with 42 goals. He's got Christian Dennis, veteran striker, absolutely bang on form. He's got 16 goals this season. They've won four of their last five league games, playing with a lot of confidence. And you contrast that with Rochdale, who are really lacking belief. One win in 10 games, lost 2-0. Big game they lost 2-0 away to relegation rivals Hartlepool last weekend. That was made even worse by two red cards they had to defenders during the game. Sam Graham and Ethan Ebanks-Landell were both sent off, so they'll be suspended. They look in a really bad moment right now, and I think Carlisle can win this game.
Okay, so we've got Blackpool and Carlisle. Who completes your list for this week?
Yeah, I'm going to go with, this would be more of a surprise, but I'm going to go with Gillingham to avoid defeat away to Swindon. I mean, Gillingham, they're near towards the bottom of the table, I think, second from bottom. But they are, talk about teams in a false position. They're not in a false position based on the performances so far, but based on their squad now, with the strengthening that they're doing in January, they are not a second from bottom team. Their big weaknesses, almost everybody knows, has been a lack of goals, just 11 goals this season. But they've addressed that. I mean, they've got Tom Nichols in from Crawley, who's a real good technician, good striker. Ollie Hawkins, very decent target man in from Mansfield. So all of a sudden, they've got a decent front two. They're bringing in other players along with that. Timothy Dieng, who's a very good physical type midfielder, who's coming from Exeter, been playing quite regularly for Exeter in League One. So they really mean business in the survival battle. They've already started to to improve their results. They won 2-0 at home to Hartlepool. Then they won 2-0 away to Colchester, who have been improving lately. So they're a different proposition now. Swindon are not going to be an easy game. They won the last match 5-0 at home to Grimsby, and they are kind of playoff chasing in League Two. But they are inconsistent. They've not had back-to-back wins since September. So unsure who's going to be the manager at the moment this weekend. Jody Morris has been linked with a vacant position. Not sure if that's going to get done before the weekend. But either way, I think Swindon look opposable this week against a vastly improving Gillingham side.
OK, thanks, Dan.
You're welcome.
Brilliant to hear from Dan Charles, as always. You can check out more of his work on the Racing Post Sport website. Let's finish things off this week on Bets Club with some of Mark's best bets. Mark, we'll start with the prop shop. Now, you've been enjoying your shot on target markets in the last couple of weeks, but you could have got greedier if you wanted to.
Your last couple have had their shot on target and scored, haven't they? Ward-Prowse 2 weeks ago, and then Mitoma. What a goal that was, by the way, at Leicester. So, yeah, but a winner's a winner. Jack, unfortunately, because it's FA Cup, we haven't got any of that at the moment. It's bookmakers very slow to price up the old prop, so we'll have to wait a week for those. So I'm going to keep it really quite simple, actually, and in terms of going for a first goal scorer, Marcus Rashford against Reading. Just, I mean, it looks sort of almost too obvious to go for him, but there's plenty of 11-4 around for him to score the first goal. And I expect Man United to win very comfortably against Reading. He's playing with unbelievable confidence at the moment, off the left wing. And yeah, he looks, I think, you know, quite comfortably the most likely first goal scorer in this game. And, you know, usually when a big, heavy Premier League favourite's going up against sort of, you know, a mid-table championship team, as I expect Reading to be eventually come the end of the season, you expect the main goal threat to be, I think, a shorter price than 11-4. But he's absolutely, you know, reigning in goals at the moment, has been since the World Cup. And I'm just going to ride the Rashford wave.
Brilliant, hasn't he? 10 goals since the return from the World Cup. How about a long shot for this week?
Yeah, so I'm going to also stick to the goal scorer markets here. And Voba, who plays for Leeds, a very versatile player. We've seen him in midfield, seen him at centre-back. He can play left-back as well. You know, Accrington have had their injury problems in recent weeks, so I'm expecting Leeds to win the game. He's 22-1 for the first goal. Might be worth an each-way pop. Had two shots last week. If you go back through his statistics, he's definitely having enough attempts. I mean, when he came on against Cardiff in the FA Cup third round, the original tie, he had four shots in that game. He also, like I say, had a couple against Brentford. I think it was one against West Ham. So he's buying enough tickets. Let's hope he can win the lottery.
Indeed. Find us a winner and with some tickets in the treble this week, Mark.
Yeah, Barcelona to win away at Girona. I mean, a local derby, for those who know their sort of Ryanair airports. Girona was often down as Barcelona. It's not quite Barcelona, but probably about an hour away. Barcelona can expect, I would imagine, healthy support in the crowd for the game. They've only been there twice in sort of their La Liga history. They won 2-0 and 3-0, so expecting them to sort of treble up there. I'm going to go for Real Madrid to beat Real Sociedad. Both teams in cup action in midweek, but and that could be a slight issue because Real Madrid have got one less day to prepare for the fixture, but Sociedad were beaten away by Barcelona, and I think that there is a class difference between those top two in Spain and the rest. And then to round it off, many people, I think, will be sniffing an upset at Pride Park, but I just think that West Ham 4-6 for a Premier League team, given that David Moyes is under pressure, should it be picking a strong team? And if he does, I think they'll beat Derby.
Like the sound of that, Mark. I like the sound of your nap last week as well. It was a winner. Let's follow it in.
Yes, I mean, you know, if it won last week, why change? Just go for Real Madrid again. So Real Madrid to beat Sociedad around about 8-11. And I think the reason that Real Madrid go off at fairly big prices is because obviously there is an obsession with expected goals now, and Real Madrid never been great on the numbers, and therefore, you know, there's sort of this suggestion that, you know, that they're maybe not as good, and they're very lucky to get the wins that they do. But I just think they're a team that play on moments and have done for, you know, a long time now. This, it feels like it's gone on too long, the run of, you know, Real Madrid being lucky on the numbers. I think it's just the way they play. Real Sociedad having a very good season, but if you look closer, they haven't played any of the top eight away from home yet in La Liga. So I think that maybe explains why they're doing okay. The one game they did play against a big team, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, was Barcelona in the cup. Came up short in that one, lost in midweek. And I think it'll be a similar story against Real Madrid. Not often you get the opportunity to back them around about 8 to 11 for a non-Clasico game at home.
Absolutely. Great stuff as always, Mark. Thanks thanks again. Good to hear from Dan earlier on as well. We'll be back next week to preview the return of the Premier League action. As always, there's been a lot of tips put up in this episode. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Remember to only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you all again next week. Bye-bye.